You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. Welcome to Dolphins Talk Weekly, your one-stop audio breakdown of all of this week's Miami Dolphins news. Now, here is your host, Kevin Durr.
Good evening, Dolphins. Well, I guess it's really good morning by the time you listen to this podcast, as I'm recording fairly late on a Friday evening. Welcome to episode 20 of Dolphins Talk Weekly. I'm your host, Kevin Dern. You can follow me on Twitter at KevinMD4. You can follow the show on Spotify, iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, I must report that my co-host, Chloe, our 70-pound pit lab mix that thinks she's a lap dog, is not down here recording with me this evening. Her agent has sent over some new contract demands, and I'll have to get back to her about recording future episodes at a later date. So Chloe's definitely let her appearance go straight to her head, and she is not with us for that one. Now, we do have kind of a full show, a little bit jammed-packed, but I did want to lead off with one little announcement. If you follow me on Twitter, you probably saw that I tweeted earlier this week that I officially registered for my first MBA class. I did get accepted into the MBA program that I wanted to get into, and will be returning to school, I guess exactly a month from today when you listen to it, July 12th, is my first class. Now, going back to school will not affect the podcast. I will be recording weekly as planned, unless other kind of, you know, non-planned circumstances come up. It may affect some of my written work during the season, but hopefully we'll be able to still create a good amount of content, even going back to school. So just wanted to say, bear with me once we get to that point, but I'm very excited to begin this process. And who knows, maybe one day this will eventually tie in with my football passions and maybe lead to some open doors in the football industry. But, you know, we can't cross that bridge until we get there. And we won't get there until next month. But I am very excited, and thank you to those of you who have reached out and, you know, expressed their congratulations and all of that. It means a lot to me. And thank you to everybody who reads my articles and listens to the podcast. Now, on today's show, we're going to go a little bit into a news recap. We'll talk about some of the things we picked up on in OTAs and that sort of thing. But the meat of the show is going to be the second installment of our podcast within a podcast, the Catching Buffalo series. Now, like any good quarterback, sometimes you have to make an audible. And because of the MBA process and getting my application done and some other paperwork that the school needed and all of that, I didn't give myself enough time to watch the Bills' losses from last year. I had originally said that was going to be part two, their losses to the Tennessee Titans and both losses to the Chiefs. I'll be honest, I haven't had time to start any of those games. But like any good quarterback, I audibled, and we're just going to switch around the parts. So on this week's episode, we're going to do a comparison of quarterback play. And really what we're doing is comparing Tua Tagovailoa to Josh Allen and where Josh Allen was in his quarterback journey and what kind of step he took from year one to year two to get the Bills to the playoffs. So that'll be the bulk of the show. Now, as far as the news portion and the updates go, let's talk about the things that we've picked up over OTAs. Now, next week is the mandatory minicamp, and I guess the big thing came out today that Brian Flores said he expects all of the players there. Now, presumably that would include cornerback Xavien Howard and defensive end Emmanuel Ogba, both who have been notably absent during these voluntary OTAs, so no harm, no foul on their part. And Barry Jackson did report that Xavien Howard may have picked up sort of a minor tweak in his quad and was just playing it safe. But that'll be something to watch, is do those two guys make an appearance? And even linebacker Jerome Baker was asked about it. You know, he, Emmanuel Ogba, Mike Gesicki, Durham Smythe, Nick Needham, are among Dolphins that are on expiring contracts at the end of this year. And then obviously we've kind of heard about this, you know, for several months now that Xavien Howard wants to, you know, get a pay bump and have a restructured contract. Now, personally, I think the Dolphins should oblige Xavien Howard. I mean, he was should have been the defensive player of the year in the league last year. And if I had my druthers, if I were Chris Greer and Brian Flores, Ogba and Baker would probably be the two priorities in terms of giving contract extensions to out of the group of players that I mentioned. So next week will be big in that regard, seeing if they do show up. Now, it is worth noting that Jerome Baker was at OTAs this week. We also got to see Bernardrick McKinney for the first time, Will Fuller for the first time. And, you know, nice to have those guys back. And really, next week, the mandatory minicamp is kind of the end of the, I guess we'll call it the spring and early summer portion of the NFL offseason. The players really don't have anything for another couple of weeks until training camps kick off, which is usually, what, the last weekend of July, beginning of August. So the players are going to get a nice little break here coming up, and perhaps Miami gets some of that work done with contract extensions and potentially restructuring Xavien Howard and all of that. As far as some other things that we saw and kind of picked up, if you watch the videos that the Dolphins social media team puts out, if you watch and look through some of the pictures from reporters, just a couple things that kind of jumped out to me. Michael Dieter working at center. Solomon Kinley and Robert Hunt both working at right guard, as was DJ Fluker. So clearly it seems that they are moving a number of players around at various spots on the offensive line. Not that that's really anything noteworthy. They did that a lot last year. I remember Jesse Davis was cross-training at center just because of the uncertainties surrounding COVID at the time. Now, obviously, we're going to, at this point, have training camp as normal. Three preseason games, which I think the NFL was slated to cut down to that amount anyway. So we'll have a much better sense of normalcy as we get into training camp, you know, this season. And unfortunately, because of school, I won't be able to get down to Miami to cover any practices live, but I do promise I will do that in the future. I have Dolphins training camp and a trip down to the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama, as two of the things I want to accomplish on my, we'll call it, since I'm not really a reporter, but my sports writer bucket list to do. So, and then really, we kind of got some updates about Tua, you know, made some really impressive throws, had a couple one-hoppers that weren't so impressive, kind of the same thing you get, you know, with Miami's beat reporters every year with any quarterback that we've had. It's a complete mixed bag. So, you know, I do have some sources on the ground, and I like to get a lot of my information from them, and hopefully, you know, that'll help me report better once we get into training camp rather than just following along with the beat writers, because I have been to NFL practices before with the Cincinnati Bengals. I've seen how they work, and, you know, at least with Cincinnati, it's more of a small city, well, big town versus a small city. And the practices I went to, you know, this was when Carson Palmer was in his heyday with Chad Johnson and TJ Houshmandzadeh. During the 7-on-7 and the team portion of practices, I literally do not remember them dropping a single pass when Carson Palmer was the quarterback. That's how good that first string offensive unit was for the Bengals. You know, we're talking, you know, early 2000s. They were that good. It was very impressive to watch. And, you know, hopefully that's something that we'll see eventually down the road from Tua. As far as other news goes, you know, nothing to report on. Hopefully we'll have some more nuggets coming out of minicamp and then into the summer vacation period. Speaking of summer vacation, I feel like I need one right now because where I live in southeastern Indiana, it's either been 85 plus degrees and super humid with a bunch of cicadas flying around, or it's been a torrential downpour. There's really been no in between, and it's tough to keep, you know, my backyard looking nice and cut well enough to have the kids over and run out around and play and all that stuff. And fellas, you know, if you need to keep your backyard or front yard looking nice and tidy, go to manscaped.com, visit our friends there, enter the promo code DolphinsTalk, and you can receive up to 20% off of your order with free shipping. So that's manscaped.com, enter the promo code DolphinsTalk, and you can get up to 20% off of your next order there. Now, stay with me. This is going to be the thick, acidic, above-the-shoulders mustard shit that Matthew McConaughey was talking about during that famous lunch scene in the movie Wolf of Wall Street. There's going to be some numbers involved in this segment, and there's going to be some math. So if that's not your strong suit, you know, maybe grab a cocktail. I myself went a little bit stronger tonight and grabbed a nice dram of Laphroaig's Quarter Cask. It's got a little bit higher alcohol content because I feel like this episode may make me need another drink with some of the reactions we may get. I do appreciate any and all feedback and love to hear your guys' takes and comments, so please, again, feel free to hit me up on Twitter at KevinMD4. Now, in this installment, I wanted to look at quarterback play, specifically as it relates to Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. So, I figured, first of all, just to kind of give us a baseline of where we're at, I wanted to look at Josh Allen and the Dolphins quarterbacks in 2020 and how they fared against each other. Now, as you remember, Ryan Fitzpatrick started the first game against Buffalo, which was in week two. Josh Allen started both games for the Bills, and then Tua, of course, started the week 17 game, which ended up, you know, being a debacle for the Dolphins. I just wanted to kind of go over the, you know, basic quarterback statistical lines here and just kind of show you the difference between what Josh Allen did to Miami and what Miami, you know, didn't do. So let's start with 2020 and what Josh Allen did. In the two games, and mind you, he didn't even play most of the second half in the week 17 game, he went 42 of 60, which is a 70% completion rate, for 639 yards, which boils down to 10.7 yards an attempt, 7 touchdowns, and an interception. The combined work of Tua Tagovailoa and Ryan Fitzpatrick was as follows. 66 out of 105 for 62% completion rate, 689 yards at 6.6 yards an attempt, 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. So clearly, not good. There's work to be done to catch Josh Allen. And as we know, Ryan Fitzpatrick is no longer a Miami Dolphin. He is with the Washington football team. Tua Tagovailoa is the starter for the Dolphins going into the season, barring any injury between now and week one. So what I wanted to do, in order to kind of illustrate the type of jump in quarterback play that Miami needs to get from Tua, I wanted to kind of work backwards a little bit, and we'll go forwards to the present day. So, I thought the most fair place to start was by comparing the rookie seasons of Josh Allen and Tua Tagovailoa. Now, right off the bat, there's a difference. Josh Allen started 12 games, played in most of 13, versus Tua, who started 9 and played, what, 3 or 4 snaps against the Jets that first game out. So, what I wanted to do was kind of read through those stats and show you where they compare just based on what their actual amount of games were. And Josh Allen, and this is 2018, his rookie year, had 169 completions out of 320 attempts for a paltry 52.8 completion percentage, and that was at a clip of 6.5 yards per attempt. Threw for just over 2,000 yards, 2,074, had 10 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. Tua, mind you now, in basically 9 full games, well, not even 9 full games because he was pulled in the Denver and Las Vegas games, 186 completions out of 290 attempts, so that's a 64.1 completion percent, 6.3 yards per attempt, threw a shade over 1,800 yards, 1,814, 11 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. So, you know, I wanted to kind of expand on that and take a look at what happens if you put Tua at 13 full games played. Let's extrapolate his numbers to 13 games. And this is just using simple math. The formula, you know, to extrapolate that is to multiply all of Tua's numbers by 1.444444. So Tua would have had 268 completions out of 419 attempts for a 63.9% completion percentage, easy enough for me to say, which translates still to 6.3 yards per attempt. He would have thrown for a shade over 2,600 yards, 2,619, 16 touchdown passes, 7 interceptions. So what we're seeing here is essentially, you know, Tua would have ended up with better numbers over the same period of games played than Josh Allen in pretty much every category other than yards per attempt. So I feel like it's important to note that we're at least starting with a better statistical baseline for Tua Tagovailoa. And the reason I bring that up is because, well, unless you've been living under a rock, you've seen all of the detractors come out this offseason and, you know, the whole Deshaun Watson thing, which, you know, was not brought up by Miami, but was really kind of clacked off by ESPN because Deshaun Watson listed Miami as a place he would want to play. You know, that whole saga has been kind of ongoing, you know, up until Deshaun Watson's legal battles. So, you know, now that we've extrapolated those numbers and we can see that Tua's numbers would represent a better season than Josh Allen's rookie year, in terms of growth, and I'm going to borrow one of Brian Flores's, you know, not a catchphrase, but one of his favorite sayings. He always says, you know, no matter what, the team has a long way to go. And, you know, I suppose coming from his perspective and his lens, catching up to where those Patriots teams were for so long, in that sense, Miami probably does have a long way to go in his eyes. And, you know, Tua Tagovailoa has certainly a long way to go to catch up to playing at the levels that Tom Brady was playing at through pretty much throughout that entire Patriots dynasty. So what I wanted to do next was to take a look at some of the moves the Dolphins have made this offseason on the offensive side, and then take a look at the growth that Josh Allen exhibited from year one to year two. And we'll look at that from a mathematical perspective and see what those numbers could look like for Tua Tagovailoa. So in terms of some of the moves Miami's made, and I think this one is, you know, really underrated, especially when we look back at last week's episode, we saw that Buffalo was the number one team in the NFL in converting third downs. Well, Miami added Malcolm Brown, who is a pretty good third down back and receiver during his time with the Rams. I think that's an underrated addition the Dolphins made. Obviously, they signed Will Fuller in free agency, drafted Jalen Waddle, drafted Hunter Long. They've made moves on the offensive line. You know, they signed Matt Skura, DJ Fluker. They drafted Liam Eichenberg. We've talked about moving Robert Hunt from right guard from right tackle to right guard, and what that means for Solomon Kinley moving from right guard to left guard, competing with Jesse Davis at left guard. They have gotten rid of Chan Gailey and Robbie Brown and Steve Marshall. They now have co-offensive coordinators, and they brought in Charlie Fry from Central Michigan to kind of add to that running attack. So I feel like they've done a pretty decent job of catering to Tua's strengths and building this offense around Tua. And it's really, it's on him to improve. You know, I think we'll get natural improvement from the offensive line. You know, the three rookies from last year are no longer rookies. You should see a nice jump from them. We should have a receiving core that's better suited to Tua. So it's on him to make this happen. Now, what I wanted to look at to kind of give us a basis for comparison is to look at how much Josh Allen's statistics rose from year one to year two. So from 2018 to 2019 for him. And if you don't remember, the Bills made it to the playoffs in 2019, had the crazy wild card game in Houston, and ultimately lost to the Texans. But based on the statistics we already talked about from Josh Allen's rookie year, I'm just going to give you the numbers of how they either improve or, I guess, increased or decreased, and we'll apply that to Tua. So his completion percentage rose an entire 6%. It went from 52.8% to 58.8%, which, mind you, is still less than Tua Tagovailoa's completion percentage as a rookie, which was at 64.1. His yardage rose by, you know, basically 1,000 yards and improved by 1,015 yards from 2,074 to 3,089. His yards per attempt rose by 0.2 from 6.5 to 6.7 yards per attempt. His passing touchdowns went from 10 to 20, a 10-touchdown jump. And his interceptions fell by 3 from 12 to 9. So, what that looks like with Tua having the same improvement, the same statistical improvements, and we'll play this out over 16 games. Not fair to do it over 17 games because Josh Allen didn't have that schedule. So this is what Tua's year two would look like if he improves by the same statistical margins, mathematical margins, that Josh Allen improved by from year one to year two. Now keep in mind, this is in no way a prediction. I don't know if this will happen. Tua may not improve at all. He may not improve by these types of margins. He may blow these margins out of the water and have a fantastic year. We just don't know. So what I want to do is we'll take the numbers from where they ended in terms of extrapolating Tua's rookie year to 13 games. So that's the 2,600 yards, the 16 touchdowns, the 7 interceptions, right? Same statistical baseline that we gave with Josh Allen. And I know that's taking a little bit of a liberty, and I know certain listeners, you know, won't appreciate that. But I just wanted to show this in terms of the mathematics, where Tua's season in 2021 would be if he improves by the exact same margins that Josh Allen did. So again, not a prediction, just simply showing what the math, what the numbers would be. Now, in terms of completions and attempts, he would be 370 out of 560. So that 560 attempt mark is a pretty big jump over 16 games, and we'd still have another game unaccounted for because we're only measuring this over 16-game season. But 560 would have been, I think, right around 8th or 9th in the league in 2020, just to give you some perspective. Now, that 370 out of 560 equates to a 69.9 completion percentage rate. So that's a pretty big jump. And having, you know, anywhere near 70% is golden for a quarterback. The yards per attempt would go up to 6.5. So ideally, you'd like to see that be a little bit higher. And I think, given that we have guys like Waddle and Fuller and Lynn Bowden, you know, run after catch yards are going to be more plentiful for the Dolphins this year no matter what. So that probably helps, you know, kind of naturally. If he increases his yardage total by 1,015, it would be 3,634 yards. If he increases his touchdown total, again, we're taking this from the extrapolated numbers over a 13-game season. If he adds another 10 touchdowns, that would go from 16 to 26. And if he cuts his interceptions down by 3, that would go from 7 to 4. Now, think about those numbers. 69.9% completion rate, 3,600 some yards, 26 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. We haven't seen a Dolphins quarterback have a season like that in a long damn time. Now, just for some perspective, Ryan Tannehill, in the 6 seasons he was the starting quarterback, I'm not counting 2017 because he was hurt and didn't play. So in the 6 seasons he was the Dolphins starting quarterback, he eclipsed 24 touchdowns one time. That was in 2014 when he threw 27. Okay? So Tua in year 2 would already put a mark in terms of touchdown passes that was higher than all but one of Ryan Tannehill's seasons. Now, Tannehill only threw fewer than 12 interceptions one time as a Dolphin. He threw 9 in 2018, but he missed 5 games. He only played 11 games that year. So now, if you're looking at this data, this set of numbers, the mathematical increases and decreases, what it tells me is that if Tua improves at the same rate as Josh Allen from year one to year two, and Miami's defense holds serve or comes close to it, they're going to win more games. You know, consider that in this model, if we look at Tua's actual rookie year, 2020 numbers, 11 touchdowns, this would be an increase of 15 touchdowns than, you know, versus what he did as a rookie. Just for some perspective, let's assume that Jason Sanders makes all the extra points. I mean, why wouldn't he? He's the best kicker in the NFL, first team All-Pro. But if you equate that out, that's 105 more points. Now, again, we're taking that from the extrapolated season numbers. But if you're able to add 105 more points, whether it's by Tua throwing touchdowns, whether it's by, you know, Malcolm Brown, Miles Gaskin and company running more touchdowns, whether it's by defensive scores or more special team scores, if you're able to add another 15 touchdowns, 105 points, if you put that number back into 2020 in a 16-game season, Miami would be dead nuts tied in first place with Green Bay at the top of the NFL with 509 total points. Miami had 404 last year. So Green Bay was tops in the league, Buffalo was second, Kansas City third. So really right there, that 15-touchdown margin is what you're looking to improve by. If you can get 15 more touchdowns out of this offense or defense or special teams or a combination of all three, that's the jump that you need to take. Now, obviously, Miami having 404 points last year, I know there's defensive and special teams scores baked into that, and those are hardly guaranteed to repeat. Those things, turnovers, those are random. But again, think about it. If Miami stays close to those numbers on defense, and as we talked about last week, we think they're going to be pretty close, if not even better, in the front seven, with some other additions in the secondary as well that might increase them a notch. Think about how potent they can be as a team. Now again, those numbers I went over with Tua, that's not a prediction. That's just simply using that model that I went with in terms of the baseline of having Josh Allen's rookie year and how much he improved from year one to year two. Josh Allen took a bigger jump from year two to year three when Buffalo brought in Stephon Diggs. So again, there's no guarantee that Tua improves at that clip. There's no guarantee he doesn't improve at all. And there's no guarantee he doesn't exceed the improved rates that Josh Allen had. That's just simply what the numbers are telling us. You know, it's merely a possibility of what that data can show. But I do think that it shows that, you know, Tua's got a chance, even if he improves marginally, to help the team win more games. And not to kind of beat a dead horse, but, you know, indulge me for a minute on this tangent. One of the things that I see a lot of is, at least amongst Dolphins fans and Twitter, is you have a sort of a sector of fans that seem to have overhyped Tua into something that he wasn't coming out of Alabama. You know, like it or not, you know, if you were evaluating him in the same, you know, group of like Andrew Luck and Trevor Lawrence, I don't think he was ever that. I think he was a notch below. But then we also seem to have a segment, you know, kicked off by the media and the Deshaun Watson stuff, and it's kind of spilled over into a portion of the fan base that seems to think that he's terrible and he's never going to get it. You know, I mean, I even look at some of the local media names. You know, Joy Taylor, for instance, is ready to move on. You know, he's only played 9 games. I don't think you can come to any sort of conclusion about any player, other than maybe a kicker, in 9 games. You know, we gave Ryan Tannehill 7 seasons. You know, one of those, he didn't even play before we were able to kind of make an evaluation on it. And I think even then, the biggest problem was that Miami's coaching staffs couldn't evaluate what Ryan Tannehill was really best at. And then, of course, he goes to Tennessee, who has a great running game, utilizes him in play action, utilizes his arm to throw down the field, And voila, Ryan Tannehill is a top 10 quarterback. No question about it. So what was the problem in Miami? You know, Joe Philbin and Adam Gase, you know, clearly weren't the offensive geniuses we thought they were. And I think that sort of kind of whipped the fan base into a fervor where you're either Team Tua and you're all in, or you're not and you're all out. And I don't think that should be the case, because clearly Tua himself, in terms of playing, you know, I'll use an analogy. I told this to several people, you know, pre-draft, that I think Tua on a quarterback spectrum, because I don't really like comparisons, but I told several people that I thought he was somewhere between a left-handed Andy Dalton coming out of Alabama and could work his way up to being a left-handed Drew Brees if everything goes right. Now, that's a pretty broad spectrum, and he's clearly, you know, somewhere in the middle of that right now, probably leaning a little more towards the Andy Dalton side at the moment, but that absolutely doesn't mean that the needle can't be moved more towards the Drew Brees side of the spectrum over time. I highly doubt he's going to do it in 1 year. You know, to just that kind of jump is hyperbolic even in today's NFL. But it just seems to me that there's two segments of the fan base, and, you know, there's no middle ground. There's no room for explanation. There's no room for nuance and context. And I really think there should be. And that's really what the purpose of tonight's episode was to show, is that if Tua can improve, you know, by, I wouldn't even consider those to be huge margins that Josh Allen improved by from year one to year two, if Tua can match that, think about where he already is and where that would take the Dolphins' offense. You know, mathematically, we showed that that could potentially be a 15-score swing. And 15 extra points, 105 extra points, you know, would have put Miami at the top of the league last year. So I don't think they're as far off, at least in terms of the numbers perspective, that certain sections of the fan base may think, you know, they are. But they're not that close already, just because they've added Will Fuller and Jalen Waddle and made some additions on the offensive line. This still has to click on the field and not just on paper. So, you know, I feel like they've made improvements to the roster. I think the rebuilding phase is clearly done, because some of the veteran additions they've made certainly would give me vibes of, okay, they're in it to win now. When you sign a Jason McCourty and a John Jenkins, you know, these aren't younger vets. This is flying in the face of what they did last year. These are guys that are veterans, that are experienced, that can pass knowledge down, that are brought in to win. And speaking of winning, in order for Miami to accomplish these goals, in order to win the AFC East, they've got to beat Buffalo. And that's what we are going to talk about on next week's third and final installment of a podcast within a podcast, Catching Buffalo, is how did teams in 2020 beat the Buffalo Bills? So I promise I will dive into those games now that I don't have any NBA applications and other paperwork to send in. And I'll give those my due attention this week. And on next week's episode, we'll go over that. Until then, I hope you guys appreciate this episode. Follow me on Twitter at KevinMD4. I would love to hear your feedback. Feel free to suggest any ideas for X's and O's segments over the summer, because we're getting to that, you know, summer vacation period of the NFL offseason. I would love to hear from you guys. Until then, fins up. Have a great weekend.